I once heard a quote that money only amplifies who you already are. So if you right now are unhappy, maybe ungrateful, maybe kind of really waiting for, you know, your success to pop, and when that does, then I'll be happy. You know, when that does, I'll finally donate and contribute. You know, when that does, I'll finally be the type of person who gives back or builds relationship. What I've found is, it's just like the quote says, money only amplifies who you already are. So if right now you're ungrateful, if right now you're unhappy, if right now you're taking whatever money you have and spending it on possessions to make you happy, that's only going to be amplified when you reach that point of success that you're looking for. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because years and years and years ago, I really shifted my paradigm. Now, yeah, I make an amazing income that I'm so, so, so grateful for. You know, one that honestly, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I thought I probably would never make this income. The mindset switch I made years ago is I like to collect people, not things. Okay. I drive a 2012 Chevy pickup. I don't like things. I don't spend money on things hardly ever. It's usually on experiences with my friends and family and my loved ones. But I collect people. And one of the people that is one of my favorite people that I have quote unquote collected, and I hate that word, but that is in my life and in my life in a consistent way, is my guest today. His name is Doug Faith. And Doug and I first connected back in 2008. And I think we really hit it off immediately. And ever since then, we've been getting together multiple times a year. And he's a real estate investor at a really, really high level. He's an entrepreneur in many different things. He also owns a hard money lending and private lending company. We're going to be talking about those things today, how I participate with him as a private lender, but how you can fund your deals better and really understand deal structuring better in this call. But the main reason I wanted to bring this up and have him on is because Doug is really in my inner circle. He's in a mastermind that I started with my good friend Patrick 5, 6 years ago. So we get together a couple times a year and we talk about a lot of life stuff. You know, we talk about a lot of life stuff. Whenever we get together, there's about 12 to 15 of us entrepreneurs, all of us highly successful people in different industries. And probably half the time, you know, half of those 2 days is not talking about marketing or how to increase your revenue or hiring. You know, half of it is talking about the life stuff. How do we be happier and more grateful and more impactful with what we already have and what we're going for? You know, how do we trim time from our days and make our days more like what we want them to be? And we're going to talk about this a lot on this episode of the Carrotcast with Doug Faith, because Doug and I went through a coaching program a few years ago that really helped us hone in on our unique abilities, really helped us hone in on the things that we're great at, that give us energy, that we love to do. And as soon as we nailed those things, which we're going to be talking about today, his business and life took off. The same year, guys and gals, my business and life took off. Carrot started the year after that. And we've both just been on these trajectories that have been amazing, and not just on the income side, but on the fulfillment side and working on things that we love to work on, that we're passionate about, and more of our time during the day being spent on the things that we love to do versus kind of grinding on the details. Okay. And this can be done. This can be done for anyone listening to this. It's not something you have to wait for 2 years to happen, or to have more money to happen, or have employees to happen. You've got to be intentional with it. So we're going to walk through Doug's story as a real estate investor, as an entrepreneur, walk through how he did his first deals, how he went into student housing and really tackled that market for about 7 years in Philadelphia. And then he made the switch based on a market shift. So we're going to talk about that market shift. And if you're in apartments or multifamily, you definitely want to hear about this. And why now he's in the hard money lending and private money lending business with the current market state. Okay. And last, we're going to be talking about a lot about unique ability. You know, how do you find your unique ability, the thing that gives you energy that you're amazing at, and how do you make sure that you structure your life and your day more around the things you're great at and less around the things that drag you down? All right, this could be a life-changing call for you, but let's dive into hear Doug's story, because I really, really love collecting people and collecting stories, and Doug's is an amazing one. So without further ado, guys and gals, let's dive in and introduce Doug Faith. Hey guys and gals, Trevor here with Investor Carrot, and I've got a special guest of mine, and my guest today, Doug and I have known each other for years. I'm trying to think, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about our story, how we met, you know, all the different entrepreneurial things that he's doing and how we skydived together to raise a bunch of money for entrepreneurs over in Africa and a whole lot of things, guys and gals. We're touching a lot of topics because Doug's a good friend of mine, has an amazingly interesting, I think, interesting entrepreneurial background. And it's just one of the good guys. You know, it's like when you meet and really connect with someone and you just know that this isn't just going to be a business transaction or a business relationship, but it transcends into a personal relationship. I think that happened pretty darn quickly with Doug and I, at least for me, way back when. So welcome on the Carrot Cast, Doug. Great to have you, man.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here. And, you know, I've listened to just about all the episodes as it is, or most of them anyway. And so I've been enjoying being a listener, and it's great to be on now with you.
Dude, I love having you on here. And it's very timely, too, because we've been trying to make it work for a little bit of time, but you had a very important event just happen. Why don't you tell everyone listening to this what just happened to you and your wife?
Yeah. Well, we are first-time parents. We had a baby girl named Jade on the New Year, on January 1st, New Year's baby.
That's cool.
And so I'm, you know, a couple weeks into fatherhood, and it's just amazing, man. I mean, she's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. Dude, so, I mean, you're obviously brand new as a father, and you'll find over the next 6 months, next 2 years, kind of how you're going to adjust your schedule and priorities and stuff like that. But I'm just curious, has anything, and be honest and transparent here, but has anything already kind of mentally adjusted in your priority matrix? And are you looking to adjust stuff in your business already?
So things have adjusted in a handful of ways. I mean, mm-hmm. There's definitely a new level and a different type of like inspiration for me to just go out and do what I do in the world business wise and just as a human being, mm-hmm. Like who I want to be for my daughter. So that has definitely, you know, happened immediately. The other thing is I'm able to do a lot more on a lot less sleep. I used to be, you know, where like I needed like 8 hours or minimally like 6 hours. And if I had less than six, I noticed the impact that it had.
Yeah.
Now if I get like 5 hours, like 2 hours here and 3 hours here, like that's a good night sleep. So.
Well, dude, the good news is that doesn't last forever. I know with us, it's kind of like you're sitting there at week three or week two or week four and you know, up in the middle of the night, and sometimes it can feel like forever, but it's 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and then the phase changes and it's into a new phase. And so it's just enjoy the phase, even as crazy as it can be, because you'll look back on it and be fond about certain parts of it for sure.
There sure. is one other thing too, real quick, that, uh-huh. that I'll share is, you know, I mean, I love my wife. She's always been amazing, but just like going through the whole birthing process, mm-hmm. it's like, she's my hero. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, they go through not only for the 9 months, the delivery, and then just the nursing and just, you know, everything else. I'm talking about 5 hours of sleep. She's on a lot less than that and the one doing the heavy lifting, but it's just, it's awesome just being like present to like the miracle of birth and the joy of children. So I'm smack in the middle of that right now and really enjoying it.
Dude, I love it. So I'm going to give people a little bit of a glimpse on you and what I know about you. And then we're going to dive into your story and what you're doing as a real estate investor, you know, developing properties there in Philly, buying houses, student housing around Pennsylvania. You own a hard money lending company. You guys are just doing all kinds of things around the real estate market. So we're going to touch base on all those. But one of the things, man, I really respect about you of many, but one of the things I really love is how you and your wife have been big on travel and really been big on making your business, making real estate so it's structured to serve you guys as good as possible, you guys and your clients and your team members. And you guys travel a lot. Now, you guys have been on multiple extended trips. I'd love to kind of open that up for convo here in a bit. Of course, you are part of my mastermind that we hold a couple times a year, so we get to connect there a couple times a year. And we've also been in some other programs, Strategic Coach, where we got to get together once a quarter. And man, how do you feel, I guess, what do you feel that entrepreneurship, what's the purpose for entrepreneurship in your life? Because you have all these aspirations to travel and the impact you want to make. Could you make that without entrepreneurship? And what role does entrepreneurship play in your life?
So for sure, I would not be able to make the impact and do the things that I want to do if it wasn't for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I'd say sort of what entrepreneurship means to me and sort of why I chose entrepreneurship has changed maybe when we get into some of the details. But real high level, I've just always been a person that wants it all. Like I just want it all. And not about me, Doug Faith, but I believe anyone can have it all. Mm-hmm. And it takes, you know, you need to structure your life and set things up a certain way so that you create a foundation for workability mm-hmm. to have all of whatever it is that you want. And for me, I've just found that entrepreneurship is that foundation. It gives you that freedom. And it really is that entrepreneurial mindset where literally anything is possible. Mm-hmm. So if you start from the premise, you know, anything is possible, you then can start to ask the question, well, how can that be possible? Whether it be extended travel trips, whether it be, you know, something else that you're passionate about. And so for me, that's really, I'd say fundamentally where I started with it. And then over time, it shifted in terms of what is having it all look like. It's not just about me and the business and travel, but it's also about making a difference in the world, right? Like yeah. helping others, impacting others. And so, you know, we've been able to incorporate that into, you know, what entrepreneurship makes possible.
Dude, so give people a little bit of a snapshot on what your business setup looks like. What are you doing in business right now and all the multiple kind of working parts of it?
Yeah, sure. So essentially there's really two businesses that I own and operate. I have a real estate development company. And so in that development company, we're developing either land or warehouses or buildings. And we're primarily doing multifamily residential as well as some mixed use projects on the development side. And most of that stuff is to hold. Some of it is to develop and sell as well. Then I also have the private lending company or hard money lending company. And that company there, we fund other investors and developers. We fund their projects. And then through that, we also get to participate in some equity positions with some companies that are, you know, aligned with what we're doing. So, you know, last year we actually invested in an acquisitions company, a wholesale company, which has been a blast. We've also invested in company that purchased properties specifically from tax sales. Oof. This year we're looking at some insurance companies and title insurance companies. So, you know, things that are synergistic with real estate, essentially, where, you know, we can add value.
And you and I, kind of fast forwarding to today, you and I have been working on some projects together, me as a private lender with your company. We'll talk about that and how that works and why I fit that into my investment portfolio. But I want to roll all the way back, man. So you and I met, I think it's probably 2008, 9, 10, around there. I can't remember the specific year. It's probably yep. 10, actually.
It was 2008.
Was it 2008?
It was at the, I think we connected before, but I think we first met face to face at the Underground event at Jan Silver's there.
That's right. In Washington, D.C. So we met there the first time. And then, man, I've told the story a few times that it was at the end, man, my life list is on the desk behind me, but it was either at the end or the beginning of 2010, when I had written my first life list, and it was something I sat down and wrote it on a piece of paper, which that exact piece of paper is still in my office. It's all crumpled. I've had to rewrite with pen over the top of some of the pencil because it was wearing off. But one of the things I put on there is like item number 4 or 5 was skydive over a tropical ocean. And I'm like, I don't like heights, man. I'm not a heights guy at all. And I kind of wrote it down because I thought it was one of those things that you just do. You know, your life list is skydiving or something like that. It's something adventurous. And when I wrote it down, I really didn't have the intention or belief that I was probably going to do it anytime in the next 10 years. And I get an email from you, you know, a couple months later, maybe not even that. And it says something to the effect of, you know, I've got this mastermind that I was invited to, and I think you might be a great fit. And I looked into that, and it was such an amazing invite because the people there were just awesome. I mean, name off some of the, you don't have to name names, but some of the people that were there that were just amazing entrepreneurs. You've got Ryan Allis, you know, founder of iContact, and of course, Michael Simmons, who put it together with Jason Duff, and we're going to have Jason on a podcast here soon. Was it the founder of Redbox was there speaking to us? Was it Redbox?
Yes. Jeff, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but yep.
Yeah, so it's just amazing people, and I could not pass the opportunity up. And then out of like the cosmic, you know, whatever it is, how things are aligned when you set the intention, I get an email within another week or two after that from you or Jason saying, hey, oh, by the way, there's this fundraiser we're doing, and we're going to skydive and to raise money for a microfinance charity. And I know that's one of those moments in my life where at first I'm looking at going, man, I'm not going to do this. I'm not ready to go skydiving. And then I looked back at my life list. I'm like, man, there's some reason this popped up, you know, this opportunity to go to this amazing mastermind that I didn't even feel like I fit in with. Like I was not at the level of those guys. And then this opportunity to do one of the things in my life list right there. And it was such a blast. We did the skydive and I got back home, looked at the picture, and the picture was me skydiving, just the way that he took it, me skydiving with the tropical looking ocean out there in Florida behind me. I'm going, what the heck is going on? So, I know you're a big goal guy. How has putting out those intentions and goal setting and things like that made a difference in your life over the years from the time you got started to now?
I mean, I would say it's made all the difference, you know, and I mean, you can go back, there's tons of, you know, studies between Harvard and other things like that, where they, you know, monitor people that write down their goals and put it out there and how much it increases the likelihood of achieving that. But for me, I mean, like, that's how I live my life. I'm very structured, very goal oriented. And it is cool, even though I am that way and often have my eye on what's next. It's great when you have situations like that, sort of that you just spoke about sometimes, where it sort of creeps up on you, or maybe you wrote something down and you sort of forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And then after you do it, you go back and look and you're like, wow, not only did I skydive, but there was even more detail that I created around that goal, and it happened exactly that way. And I didn't realize it until looking at it in hindsight. Sort of gives you chills sometimes.
It when does.
Just like, you know, but I believe that's the power of intentionality, right? Of putting it out there. And then, you know, taking actions in alignment with that. So, I love hearing that stuff and I love doing that stuff.
So let's go back to your beginning. How did you start investing in real estate and what came before that?
So I was actually in college. I was going to school at NYU. And at the time I was planning to work on Wall Street as an investment banker. And we had an investment banker alumni come back and tell us about the money he was making, but he was working ridiculous hours. Mm-hmm. And so I said, that's not what I want to do. I want to make money, but I want to have a life as well. And I started reading books on entrepreneurship. And one book in particular, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was a book that sort of started everything for me and opened my eyes to this whole other way. And I read that. I read Warren Buffett, a bunch of other things. And they all said, do something you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, I was playing basketball for NYU. I had always played sports and I always wore authentic sports jerseys. So I said, let me start a business selling jerseys. Had no business experience, no idea what I was doing. And I actually honestly wasn't expecting it to be successful. I started it to just learn business. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate. I lucked out. I had the right product at the right time. And I got accounts with all the suppliers right before throwbacks got really big, like in the hip hop community with Mitchell and S. So I'd place an order on my credit card before the bill came due. I sold out of the inventory. Was even do. And so that sort of launched the sports apparel company. And long story short, a year before my senior year, I realized that sports apparel, the authentic sports jerseys, was a bit of a fad. Mm-hmm. So I took the year off with the intention of selling that business and getting involved in real estate. So the year before my senior year, took the year off, and I just read every real estate book, you know, invested in my education, went to seminars, all of that. I found some mentors, to work with for free. You know, I wasn't getting paid, but that's really where I learned hands-on how to invest. They were investing all along the East Coast. So I got to check out a lot of different markets. And at the end of that year, I sold my sports apparel companies, went back to school for my senior year, knew I wanted to invest in Philadelphia. And my senior year, I was going to school full-time 4 days a week and driving back and forth from New York to Philly 3 days a week. And I bought my first four properties my senior year of school. When I graduated, just moved down to Philly to continue doing that. And that's what I've been doing the last 12 years.
Dude, so there's a couple really cool key decisions there that you made during that time of your life. So one of them that I kind of want to unpack a little bit is you consciously made a decision to take the year off. And why did you do that versus plowing through that year and then maybe adding on your research and your other business stuff on the side? And I'm not saying either way is right or wrong. It's a really key decision you made. So why'd you do that?
So I just felt with that market in particular, I mean, sports apparel and jerseys were always going to be around, but the craziness that was happening in the hip hop community with those jerseys, like I knew that wasn't going to last forever.
Yep.
So I wanted to take that year off to sort of strike while the iron was hot and make as much money as I could during that year with the intention of selling it, because I didn't want to put a lot more money into a business that I felt was about to peak. So I wanted to make all the money I could that year, sell the business, and then take that and parlay that into real estate, which is why while I was working on selling that business, I also took that year to get educated in real estate, start working with real estate investors. Cause I think, you know, the best way, if there's something that you want to do, the best way to go about and have that is to find people that are doing what you want to do, follow them, shadow them, work with them. And it just, you know, speeds up the learning curve tremendously.
Dude, that's cool. So you're spotting a trend and capitalizing the trend, move over to real estate. And we'll talk about trend spotting later and how you're doing that in the real estate market. Cause that's really, really fascinating stuff. So you moved there, you bought some properties. One thing I know about you that I don't think you mentioned was you're a student housing guy. So were those first four properties student housing properties, or were those not?
So the fourth one was, the first three were not. I actually stumbled into student housing, and we'll come back to trends and demographics in a moment. But my strategy from the beginning was I just wanted cash flow properties. It had to make money every month. I had to have at least 25% equity. So I started out buying low income housing. And one day I was looking at this property that I thought I'd rent out for $750 a month. And the seller's like, no, you could rent that to students for $2,000 a month.
Jeez.
And I was like, you know, so that was the beginning. Now, it turned out that property, there's no way I was going to rent that one to students. He was doing a sales job on me. But that is actually how it opened the door for student housing. When I started looking into it, I saw that the demographics were there. There was, you know, huge demand for student housing and not enough supply. And, you know, sort of stumbled into that. But once I saw that, then again, sort of striking while the iron's hot, I just focused solely on student housing for man, how many years? I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years in terms of my real estate acquisitions. It was primarily student housing during that time.
Are you finding that the student housing market has changed just in the past 2 or 3 years with all the student debt and kind of the changing in the psyche of America anyway on the value of a college degree?
So it definitely has. I don't know if that's why it's changed yet. I actually think what you just mentioned is going to have an effect, and a pretty big effect. I actually don't even think that's hit yet. I think what has hit yet, it's like anything else. When there's hot markets and hot niches, that's where money flows. So much money has flowed into student housing that, you know, I haven't developed any new student housing in 4 years, where for like 8 years straight, we were putting up multiple buildings every year. And that was because prices, you know, got significantly higher. Rents actually started to dip a little bit. So I still have my portfolio, which is fine. But in terms of new stuff, we just haven't added to that because of just where the market has gone. Like pricing has gotten insane. And I guess you could probably say that a lot about it. A lot of different asset classes, but certainly with student housing, we found that to be the case the last few years.
So for people that are doing student housing or looking for it, I know just in the years that we've talked, there's some things that you've learned to kind of protect yourself as a building owner with student housing. What are a couple of things off the top of your head that you have to do if you're owning student housing?
Well, the greatest thing about student housing is you get mom and dad cosign. Right. So if you have a 4-bedroom apartment or house, not only do you have 4 students assigned, you have 4 co-signers signed. So you have 8 people on the hook. So one of the things I loved about it was like I don't want to say never. There were very small scenarios, but we basically collected every single dollar of rent, you know, with student housing, where you compare that to low income housing or your typical real estate rentals, that it's pretty unusual. So we were able to charge more in rent. Right, because it was renting per bedroom, even if it was a single lease, and we had more security because we had more co-signers on the hook. So those were some of the nice advantages of that.
Sweet, man. So student housing, yeah, that phase, but you've made a transition. So what was the transition that you moved into after that student housing binge?
Yeah, so you know, student housing, the next thing was, okay, the young working professionals, right? They've now graduated from college. They need a place to live. They're, you know, working downtown or, you know, near their subway. And that was really the transition that I made. So it wasn't far from what I was doing because I was dealing with the same demographic as they got older now that they've graduated. And so just went from student housing to, you know, true apartment rentals. for, again, the young working professional.
Mm-hmm. And you're in Philly. Are you 100% in Philly as far as your properties go? Have you concentrated there?
Yeah. So in terms of rentals that I own, that's all been in Philly. The lending stuff is outside of Philly, but all my development stuff that I've done today has been in Philly.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I want to kind of throw out there is you've got this warehouse conversion project, which I'd love to talk about it because we haven't talked about it in a while. So I've kind of been seeing your Facebook posts on it. It looks like a lot's happened, but let people
finally
know.
Done.
Yeah, dude, it looks exciting. So let people know kind of about that project, where you found the property, what it was like before, some of the hurdles you had to go through, and what you guys have finished and rolling out to consumers now.
Yeah, so that was an interesting property in the sense it was a 5,000 square foot warehouse, which we ended up converting to a 7,000 square foot warehouse, and it was actually zoned single family, which doesn't make much sense, right? It was abandoned, and so we acquired the property. We had to go through zoning to get a variance to change it to residential units, and we were able to get it approved for 7 lofts. And so we, you know, renovated those. Again, we added some square footage on the third floor, and so we've got, you know, 7 units in there that we're renting out now. And it's just cool. Like, I'd say it's probably my favorite project that I've done to date. Mm-hmm. It's just a cool look. You know, I love sort of repurposing stuff like that. And it's got, you know, just like behind you, that exposed brick that you got behind you there, that loft style feel. Like, it reminds me, being from New York, it reminds me of New York. And it's just a cool vibe. And, you know, we just started putting them out to rent. And, you know, so far they've been, you know, going like hotcakes. So it's been great.
So how'd you fund the deal? How'd you make that deal happen?
So this was a owner that we tracked down. So, you know, the majority of the deals that I've done and that I've developed, you know, we have specific areas that we target, and we'll look for vacant properties or vacant land that we want to acquire. Mm-hmm. And then we'll skip trace and track down the owners, get in touch with them and negotiate and put it under contract. That's typically how we get our deals.
And then the funding, where'd the money come from?
So we raised some equity for that deal. Mm-hmm. And then we also got bank financing. And now once we're fully occupied, we're actually going to refinance and into a Fannie Freddie loan and get some non-recourse financing, which I'm super stoked about because all the financing I've done to date, I've been on the hook personally guaranteeing it. So this will be our first non-recourse loan where Doug Faith doesn't have to personally guarantee it. So I'm excited about making that transition for myself as an investor.
That's cool, man. Dude, one thing that really impressed me when you guys were raising the funds for that deal, I know I saw the proposal for it, and it just wasn't good timing for me. If it was today, I'd be jumping on that today, but it just wasn't good timing at the time. And it really impressed me that you guys were not trying to give the investor as little as you guys could possibly give them. I mean, it was a really generous deal that the investor was getting, and we don't have to talk about details on it unless you want to, but, it was a really generous deal. And I'm looking at it going, man, this is going to get snapped up really fast because it's a great deal. And as long as you trust the developer, as long as you trust you, it's almost a no win, you know, for on the investor side. So, kind of, what's your psyche there when you're partnering with people on the lending side or a money partner on how you motivate them and make sure that they know that they're valued? Because you could definitely tell you guys did value the investor in that deal.
Well, certainly appreciate that feedback, and it's nice to hear that. And and we do make efforts to do that. You know, when I put out sort of investment opportunities, I try to make it as much as a no-brainer as possible, or put myself in their shoes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how would I need to present this deal to myself where I'd be like, okay, I want in on this, you know, let's do it.
Yep.
And so I think operating from that context, you know, has allowed us to put out stuff that's, you know, that's favorable. And I think that's the thing. A lot of new investors, a lot of times when they go out and raise money, you know, they're just thinking about themselves and getting the deal done.
Yep.
They're like, oh, well, I can't raise money, or I'm having difficulty raising money. Well, you know, yes, of course you've got to think about yourself, but you need to think about how it's going to be received on the other end. And, you know, if you can give favorable opportunities to people and make them money, you're going to end up having more money than you know what to do with.
Yeah. And that's, man, and that's the way that I saw that proposal. And being honest, I mean, you and I have been friends and stuff, but just seeing how you structured that and seeing how that deal and your other projects have gone, it made it a no brainer to work with you guys on the private lending side of things. And you know, like, so we'll talk about that here in a bit. But, dude, one thing that I've always been really impressed about you. And I think you and I have a lot in common in this side is you've really built meaning into your business. And I think a lot of real estate investors, they struggle with getting beyond the transaction. You know, they're in business so they can close those one or two or three deals a month or whatever their number is. And they don't ever get beyond the transaction as their why. Their why is to go out there and chase the next deal. Walk people through why you named your development business Wealthy Passion, first of all. And what is your wealthy passion? Like, what is that passion you've got behind the scenes that is part of your why that isn't really chasing deals?
Well, and it really is, as the name says, you know, wealthy passion, but like really creating wealth, doing what you're passionate about, you know, mm-hmm. doing what you love to do. And so I think a lot of times people feel like it's got to be mutually exclusive. Like I either have to make money or do what I'm passionate about or do what I love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the two can absolutely be, you know, married together. So, you know, what excites me is exactly doing that, you know, doing things that I love to do that create wealth and make money, and also making opportunities like that for the people I'm working with, whether it be, you know, investors, whether it be, you know, people that I'm partnering with, whether it be, you know, people that we're lending money to. You know, that's really one of the things that I actually think sets our lending company aside, is because both myself and my partner, Jeff, like we get juiced up about really understanding the people that we're lending money to, like how does that help them achieve their goals, right? Or investors that we're working with, yeah, it's great to take their money, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what is their, you know, big goal and how does this fit in and help them achieve that? So that it's not just about making money. Yes, you need to make money and you need to continue making money in order to do those things. And as you would say, amplify, right, the difference that you're going to make. But, you know, again, which for me, it goes back to having it all, right, going back to what we were talking about earlier, both creating wealth and doing what you love.
Dude, one of the coolest things I remember us talking about is that one of the strategic coach sessions, you know, back in 2012 or whatever year that was, 13, yeah. Whatever year it was. time flies by. But how you were talking about this side of your business where you were going in and using something that is a skill set that you guys have and taking the projects and helping to correct me if I'm wrong in these details, but you know, helping them to finish their renovations or reposition the project, and maybe they didn't have the knowledge or the skill set or the money to do so, and you'd go out there and help them really increase the value of their property when they might have been ready to give up, you know, on their deals because they had these properties that weren't performing or that weren't fun to do. Kind of walk through to people those problems that you were identifying that many investors were having that you were able to go through and help many of them solve with that service you're running.
Yeah, so, and you're right, that was a few years ago we were doing that service mm-hmm. there, but essentially we had identified, or opportunities were coming our way, where there were other real estate investors, I'll call them operators, mm-hmm. that had a portfolio of properties. Just for whatever reason, they were doing a poor job of operating their portfolio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they actually had equity in their properties, but they were no longer cash flowing. Maybe there was vacancy. They had back paid or unpaid, you know, real estate taxes and whatnot. And so if they didn't do anything, they were going to end up losing the properties. But because there was equity there, you know, we were able to come in and sort of JV with them, where we got paid a fee for turning around their portfolio. And then once the portfolio was turned around and income producing and we helped them out with their credit or whatever needed to be done, we would actually get bought out of the JV agreement that we had. So at the end of the day, you know, we got paid a consulting fee and we also got a piece of the upside for what we turned around. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they went from, you know, something that they were going to lose either to the bank or to taxes, that now it was all income producing. They had plenty of equity, they had cash flow, and we were help them realize what they wanted to do. Because what we found with these real estate operators, they were tired of operating and doing a poor job of it, but they actually didn't want to sell their assets. And the reason why they didn't want to sell their assets was because they had a vision at one point of having this cash flowing rental portfolio. And it was like this emotional thing where they didn't want to sell it, but if they didn't sell it, they were going to lose it. So we were able to come in, again, listen to what their goals were, understand the obstacles, and, you know, create a win-win situation.
Dude, one of the things I love the most about that is I think a lot of people, they get stuck in this one track mindset of I'm a wholesaler, I'm a flipper, or I'm an apartment person or whatever it is. And they think that it's kind of the old saying of, you know, when you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? And so they go after everything, trying to wholesale or trying to flip or whatever. And one thing that you guys did, which is amazing, we did the same thing here with Carrot. And I would really urge people listening to this to do the same, is to really pull back and go, man, what am I great at? What am I really good at? You know, what am I probably better at than a lot of the other investors out there doing things? And can you go to all those other people who are in the business that are struggling with what you're good at and find a way to partner with them on stuff? I mean, if you're a wholesaler and you're amazing at buyers, go out there and try to find a way to help them get buyers or sell their properties or whatever. If you're a wholesaler and you're amazing, or whatever it is, if you're amazing at filling, properties with great tenants, go out there and find all those people who are struggling with it and help them do it and find some way to capture on the upside. Or like us, you know, we're great at generating leads online, and we're like, well, let's see if we can help other investors do the same. And now we help thousands of them. So, man, that's really cool. You guys identified a skill. You've got all this demand where they already started the hard work. You guys just go in and inject your skill, and it worked well for everyone.
And that's, you know, really the key. And this goes back as well to, you know, the time we spent together at Strategic Coach and a lot of the things that they talk about there, right? Like focusing on your unique ability, that mm-hmm. thing that, you know, you're best at. And for me personally, what for the 12 years or so that I was developing real estate, you know, not that's past tense, I still develop it, but, you know, we were doing property management in-house, we were doing construction management in-house. I hate that stuff. I mean, I learned a lot doing it in-house, but that's not what I'm best at. And if you look at sort of my growth, a lot's happened from when I repositioned all that stuff. We outsourced the property management, you know, on the development stuff. Now we no longer do the construction management in-house. And I partnered with someone on the development side that used to have a construction company. Like that's, you know, we have a lot of overlapping skill sets, but like he's got the construction side dialed in, you know, similarly on the lending company. I have a partner that now for that as well. And it's all inside of, you know, for me personally, I wanted to spend as much time as possible doing what I'm best at, which is the finance side of things and structuring things to be, you know, win-win to achieve big picture outcomes.
Dude. So unique ability, you guys listening to this have heard us reference Strategic Coach a couple times. And this is a program, you guys can find it online, strategiccoach.com, I think it probably is. And it's a year-long program for entrepreneurs, for high-achieving entrepreneurs. And it really, you know, their marketing pitch is it basically helps you be more effective as an entrepreneur, you know, and to take more time off, do more of what you enjoy doing, and really kind of add some rocket fuel to your business. And I know at the time that we had talked to each other back then, and we're both kind of, hey, we've both been looking at this, and we roped Jason into it. And that year was an amazing year. And you guys are still in Strategic Coach, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So they're still in it. I kind of bounced after the first year because just for me, I had one specific thing in mind. I'm like, if I can nail this, that's what I needed at the time. And for me, it was that unique ability. I didn't know what I should be focusing on. I thought that my unique abilities, you know, what the things that I was good at were certain things like marketing and implementing the marketing and doing this and doing that. And while those are the things that were making me money, those weren't the things that energized me. Those weren't the things that I was really great at, that I could be world class at. And we struggled through it, man. We struggled through it that year. Do you remember kind of the moment that, if there was a moment, that you had finally went, man, you know, that is my unique ability. I think I finally nailed it.
I think it was probably, you know, after going through like those unique ability exercises and, you know, reading the book in addition to, you know, the workshop and just getting feedback from, you know, my inner circle and people that knew me well, what they thought my best abilities were. And like, when you see some of the similarities, you know, that come through, it's like, oh yeah, that is actually, you know, sort of what I'm best at and what I love doing. And then, so I'd say that was probably the first aha moment. And then, as you know, it's like your unique ability isn't like this like static thing. It's dynamic, right? It's always evolving. It's always, you know, changing. But I'd say that was probably the first time I was like, oh, okay. And then again, it's just cool even talking back to 2012 to now, because I feel like for me, that was really like the genesis or the beginning of the transition that happened with my core business that's now led into the main development and lending company and just everything I'm doing now. And, you know, it's awesome. And for me too, it's been share this thing and then we'll move on, but it's also been an evolution because, you know, Trevor, you and I met when we both had real estate education companies.
Yep.
And, you know, as you know, I'm super passionate about, you know, financial education. And, you know, when I ended up getting out of the real estate education space, it was always sort of like a missing for me where I wasn't able to, you know, fill that void. And after, you know, honing in on my unique ability, that was one of the things that the private lending side ended up being such a natural extension. Cause like, yes, we're lending capital, but we also do a lot of coaching, consulting, strategy with that, again, to help them achieve their goals. So I was able to like scratch that itch and thing that I'm passionate about and, you know, sort of roll that over into the new business. And it's just been a great fit.
And dude, and it sounds like you're doing that coaching, consulting more toward the ideal type of person you're wanting to work with. And I think that was probably one of the issues before, and going to be completely transparent with people on this call, that in any type of business, there's types of clients you want to and should work with, and there's types of clients you shouldn't. And not trying to be mean or anything like this, but there's certain clients that you just cannot give time to because they're going to zap it all, or they're going to bring you down, or they're never going to follow through and implement it. And I think that's one of the magical things that's making it work great for you is you're still able to teach it and coach it and really help those clients, but it's the exact type of client you can best help.
Exactly right.
Which
exactly.
is cool. So on the unique ability side, and I want to kind of address this and we'll kind of move on to the next topic is, you guys might be going, okay, what the heck is unique ability anyway? And I know for me, one of the reasons that I went through that journey with Doug and with Jason, who we will be introducing you guys to on a future episode of the Caracast. He's an amazing entrepreneur. He's our age, a real estate developer, taking over the one town in Ohio, just developing the entire town. Owns a marketing. I mean, he's an amazing entrepreneur. You guys are just, he does it all literally. Just an amazing person. You guys get to meet him on a Caracast. But we were in Strategic Coast together for that year. And like I said, my aim going into it was, and I've been very, very vocal about this phase of my life, 2010, 11, 12. I started 2010, 11, 12 anyway. It wasn't the best years of my life. I mean, there was nothing to complain about, you know, amazing family, made a great income, you know, a great business partner, great people here locally. I'm just looking at it going like, why was I not happy at that time? And really looking back now, I wasn't happy when there's all indications that I should have been because I wasn't working on the things day to day that I loved. You know, the majority of the things that I was doing the day to day zapped my energy. I would get done with that day looking back, going, man, I did a lot of stuff, but is this all that there is? You know, is this all that there is in my business? And there's got to be something greater. There's got to be something greater that I can make an impact for. And man, I didn't become an entrepreneur to be in a grind, you know, perpetually. And for me, the one thing that cracked through was the coach at Strategic Coach that we had. It's the simplest thing in the world, man. I even bought the Unique Ability book the year before thinking I could hijack the whole process and not pay my $6,000 or $7,000 or whatever it was and buy a $20 book and solve it all. But she asked a question. She said something to the effect of, you'll know when you find your unique ability when you identify the things that you're really good at and they give you energy. When you're done with them, you have more energy than when you started. And for me, I don't know why, like the simplest thing in the world, I'm like, man, that's simple. Because I could easily and quickly identify the things that gave me energy when I'm done. Podcasts, things like this, talking to people like you, man, gives me energy. Strategy, doing the strategy of marketing or doing the strategy of business gives me energy. Implementing it zaps my energy. Which is where all of my time was spent before. Probably 80% of my time was implementing strategy. And that was the big difference for me. And I know like you mentioned, you're the genesis of your kind of rebirth as an entrepreneur, if you want to call it that, was around that time period and kind of discovering those things about yourself. The same thing was true for me. And it really did come down to spending more time in what I did, doing the things I love. I've got a question for you. So, cause this is true of me. I'm curious if it is for you. So I think one of the reasons I didn't buy into the fact that I could spend most of my time in my unique ability is because I didn't think that I could build a business that made money that I was just talking and doing podcasts and just doing and just doing strategy without implementing and just leading people. Go for it.
Absolutely. I mean, as you say that, what I hear is it's just a limiting belief, which we all have, which I certainly have as well. And I would agree, certainly for me, and I think for most of us, it's like it's like, oh, if you could do what you love and what you're best at and what gives you energy, like it's almost like too good to be true, right? That you can really have this like thriving, successful business, you know, where that's what you're spending the majority of your time on. And I think it just comes down to, you know, challenging that limiting belief. Obviously, what you've done and have done a great job at it. It's like, it's interesting how like sometimes we know something conceptually, which absolutely makes no difference though, like in the real world, right? Sometimes you got to go out there, experience it, sort of see it. And it's like, oh wow, like this does exist. I can do this. Okay. Let me do more of this. Let me, you know, grow this and expand upon this.
Dude, I think one of the keys for me too, just kind of thinking through that is, I a good friend of both of ours and a mentor of mine, Greg Clement, who's amazingly successful entrepreneur, both in software and real estate and development. And they have a monstrous farm now in Ohio and just does amazing stuff. He's just a great guy of faith. I was in a mastermind with him in 2012 and he originally introduced me to strategic coaches. Like you got to go. He's talked about unique ability a lot. And I would look at him go, man, like that is what I want. Like his work day seemed like a dream. He had a great team that was just leading stuff and pushing stuff forward. And he was able to do things that were interesting for him, but not invest all of his time just in one thing. And I was going, man, that's what I want. And like I was saying, I was kind of discounting that fact that I could have that because I'm like, well, he's got a big team, you know, he's got a team and that's the reason why he's able to do that. Cause he has the team. And I just need to grind on this thing more and make more money so I can hire a team is what I was saying.
Yep.
But what was the magical turn for me was identifying those unique abilities and then realizing on the flip side of it, that there's other people with unique abilities that complemented mine. So I want to talk about partnerships here in a bit. And we talked about partnership a decent amount at our last mastermind out here in Bend, this past year. And it sounds like you've got partners in most, if not all of your businesses right now.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, again, going back to having it all, having the freedom, like, you know, creating your businesses and your life the way you want. What I saw for myself sort of early on, and then again, you know, a handful of years back when I was going through that transition, was that in order for me to have these things and do the things that I want to do, partnership is required for me to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
So having identified that, it just made it like really simple, because sometimes people are funny about partnerships. I don't know if I should have a partnership, or this person says it's a bad idea, this person says it's a great idea. Well, for me, I was resolved. It's what it's going to take for me to do the things that I want to do.
Yep.
And then I had a mentor that created a course called the Partnership Profitable Maximizer, which for me is like the Bible of partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. So I use that in any partnership that I get involved with. And I really feel that's sort of been the bedrock and one of the reasons why the partnerships that I've had so far have been successful. Now, I've had partnerships that haven't worked as well, but when we talk about my two main partnerships so far, I think a lot of that is because of like going through the exercises in that. And again, it's not a static thing, it's dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're reviewing things, if not quarterly, certainly on an annual basis. It's like a marriage, right? It's like you got to work on it and keep, you know, giving more than you're receiving and having it work.
So on the partnership side, you know, we both have had partnerships that didn't work and some that have been amazing. And I can definitely reflect on why certain ones of mine didn't work. And it wasn't necessarily the person on the other side. I've been fortunate to where I've had partnerships with amazing people. It was that they were probably the wrong person for that business. Or we were too much alike. was the issue with one of them. Dude, what did you find are some of those keys with your partnerships where it's like, these are my keys. If I'm going in a partnership with someone that I've got to do this or they've got to check these boxes.
Yeah. So first high level, I'd say the key is you need to discuss and put on the table, like the stuff that you don't want to talk about or questions you're afraid to ask or bring up. That's most important. And then the other thing for me, which is super important, is that like our values are aligned. right? You know, again, as we talk about, like, making a difference is just a big part of who I am and my business is. And I can't be in partnership with people that don't have that same vision and alignment, because we're going to end up clashing. At the end of the day, it's not all about dollars and cents, right? Sometimes we may make a choice where maybe we'll lose a little bit of money, but there's a higher vision or higher purpose for, you know, the difference that that's going to make, or it's just the right thing to do, right? So having alignment with that is important. And then the other piece is, what roles are we going to be doing? As you were talking about, you know, if we're too similar, you know, that may not work out. But what roles are you doing, and at what time are you doing those roles? Because there's three phases of a partnership. There's the creation phase, there's the maintenance phase, and then there's the dissolution phase, which a lot of people don't talk about the dissolution ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So you need to talk about those three phases, and then what roles are you and your partner doing in each of those three phases, because it's going to change. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to talk about a lot of that stuff ahead of time before you get into the partnership, it's going to increase the likelihood of success that you're going to have in the partnership, or sometimes it prevents you from it. I'll share one quick story through our lending company. I was telling you about some of the equity investments that we've made. Mm-hmm. We were looking at an equity investment last year where we've been talking with them for about 7 months of actually partnering with them. We went through the entire, you know, exercise and workbook, and after 7 months, we ended up choosing not to partner with them. And it was extremely frustrating. It was extremely disappointing because of the time and money that we had put out.
Yeah.
But it was a blessing, because we realized before we got into the partnership that we're better off not partnering. It's a lot easier to break up before you have anything to break up about than being in the middle of something and having to dissolve and break up.
Yep. Dude, I heard some really good wisdom just in the past year. There's a guy who rents an office here out of my office building here at the Loft, and amazing young guy. He's a bow hunter, and he made a film tour, and he's got the largest film tour for bow hunting in the country and 30 something cities. And anyway, he's going through a partnership issue. And he has a mentor that was talking to him. He's like, man, you always got to plan the divorce before you dive into marriage. And it's a really good way to put it. It's like, man, you really do have to look at what is the worst case scenario. And if this does go down in a bad way, let's get the details set right now, because it's easier to decide those now and agree upon them than when, you know, pardon my friend, shit hits the fan. Then it's like heads knocking and trying to figure out what's right. That's awesome. So on the partnership side, man, have you guys take the Colby test? Your partners?
Oh, yeah. That's part of it.
Okay. Yeah. So everyone listening, there's a test called the Colby test, Kolbe, and you can take it. I don't remember if it's the Colby B index or A or whatever. It's the $49 one or whatever that is. But we have every single one of our team members take it before you ever get hired here. And I can tell you, man, that has changed our business and the way I look at hiring and partners in a massive way.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's massive way.
Yeah. Partners, employees, I mean, everything. It's super indicative of how we as human beings just naturally operate and react to life and what we're doing.
So where do you land, man? Do you remember what your score is, at least on the follow through and quick start?
So I'm a quick start, right? I'm 3.583, right? Okay. So when it comes to quick start, I'm an 8, right? So I'm like, you know, let's go right away, and then follow through. Is it 5? I think follow through is the 5.
Yeah.
So, you know, which again, going back to talking about partners, and, you know, while we do have a lot of overlapping skill sets, you know, my partner Jeff on the lending side, like, his follow through, I think, is like an 8 or something.
Oh, really?
You know?
Jeez.
Yeah, he has a much higher follow through than I do, right? So it's awesome in the sense, like, I'm quick start, let's go. And then, you know, when we got to take things to the finish line, I taper out because I'm about a 5. Mm-hmm. And then he's clutch, you know, getting it done and getting it close, right? So that's just one example of, you know, how we use the Colby score.
Dude, it's so powerful. We could do a whole call just on that. But yeah, I'm a 5.28 something. I don't remember what my last one is, but I'm a 2 on follow through and an 8 on quick start. So you can imagine what it's like to work with me, right? Because you know that you're an 8 on quick start, which means we have ideas. We love ideas. We'll say yes to lots of stuff, even stuff we probably shouldn't say yes to. We're visionary. We cast a vision, and we hope that we can cast that vision for other people, and they can kind of go alongside that with us. And we're comfortable working on many things at once and even leaving some things halfway done. And that's kind of one thing that, is one of my MOs. But on the flip side of that, if you're partnering with someone who's also a high quick start and low follow through, that was one of the reasons a previous business of mine didn't work. Both of us were the same. We had tons of ideas. We never got anything done. You know, we never got anything done. So but we didn't know that. We had never taken the Colby score. We just took it as like, oh my gosh, one of us is not getting stuff done. And we kind of would blame it on each other and on ourselves. And it was frustrating. But my business partner with Carrot, he's the opposite. He's about a 2 or 3 on quick start, 6 or 7 on follow through, and kind of that yin to the yang. You know, when I toss out too many ideas, or we just need to ship the darn product instead of iterating it more, he'll say, hey, we're cutting this off, or take that idea and put it into Asana, a project management thing, so it'll be there later. Yep. Let's focus on what we're trying to focus on right now. So it's a big deal. Dude, let's talk about the hard money lending side on a little bit now. Let's kind of wrap this up. And what was your decision to dive into that side of the business? Why'd you guys do that?
So again, for me, going back to, you know, unique ability, when real estate wise, I was doing all these things in house, the construction, the property management, the deals. And what I enjoy the most and what I'm best at is really the finance side and the deal structuring side mm-hmm. of things. And as I was doing those portfolio turnarounds that we were talking about, I realized how the financing was such an important piece of that. And since that was more aligned, you know, with my unique ability, I wanted to get into the lending space. And so, you know, I put that out there. And my partner, Jeff, he had come from the distressed note world, so mortgage side and note side of things. And before we partnered, I had known him probably for 3 or 4 years. And I really respected what he had done in his business. And likewise, he the same of me. And so we get together every quarter and just kind of catch up with no intention to sort of get into business. And as I was looking to get into the lending side, what I found in the apartment market and the student housing market was pricing just was getting really insane. Mm-hmm. What Jeff found in his mortgage and note business was pricing had gotten insane. Stuff that he had bought in 2008, 2009 at 15 cents on the dollar was now 50 to 60 cents on the dollar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we both saw these same things in our separate businesses, and at the same time, we saw an opportunity to really build the lending business and be, you know, be local and you know, really just make a difference locally for focusing working with experienced investors to help them grow and scale their portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sweet spot of the type of deal and type of borrower you're looking for with, and first of all, the name of the company is called Legacy Capital. So you guys can look them up, legacycapital.net, is it?
Legacycapitalpa.com.
That's right, legacycapitalpa.com. So what it's geographic?
I was going to say, it's a great website. It's powered by this company called Parrot.
Yeah, that's right. So it's funny, man. There's been a lot of people over the years who have asked us about private lending websites or hard money sites or something. And I was putting it off. And then finally you hit us up. I'm like, you know, it's time to do it. And I'll work on it with Doug. And that's where my high quick start, low fall through kicked in. And where I didn't bring a high follow through in on, alongside of me early enough. And the project took way too long, but now we have a handful of people with some hard money sites that we've been working through. But anyway, yeah, you guys are on that with us, which we're grateful and amazing. But yeah, what's that sweet spot for you guys on the borrower side?
Yeah, so for us, it's experience. It's not the newbie. It is experienced investors that, you know, have a track record, that, you know, have done a handful of deals. Oftentimes, they've gone out and they've raised either private money. They've used some bank financing, but the issue is their financing sources have been tapped out mm-hmm. and they're now growing and scaling and they're running out of money. Mm-hmm. And so we're designed specifically for operators that are growing and looking to scale to sort of help take them to that next level, you know, whatever it looks like for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got borrowers that do, you know, 3 to 10 deals a year, where borrowers that are doing, you know, 70, 80 deals a year. So I know that's a pretty big spread there. But in all those situations, wherever they're at, they're growing and looking to get to that next level and just sort of putting in strategic coach terms or hitting their ceiling of complexity mm-hmm. where they just can't go any higher unless they do something different. And part of doing things differently is their capital stack, which we're able to help them with.
Dude, there's this one example you were giving me just in the past year that we were talking about. And this is really important for a couple of reasons, because I think it can help people shift their mindset around the way that they position their product and their offering. And you guys don't offer the cheapest rates in the world, probably. I mean, you guys aren't the low price leader. You're not Walmart of private lending. So there was a specific case that you were mentioning to me, and we can dive into as much as little detail, but where the borrower then went off and found that his brother or someone could find a cheaper rate somewhere, right? So then you guys were talking through it. Is that something you'd kind of mind sharing, that example, and then also why it's so important to work with a lender that does things the way that you guys do it? Because the way you guys do it is very, very important. It's not just lending money out to people at low rates.
Right. So to your point, we're not cheap. We are expensive. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because it's not just capital we're providing, but again, it's the strategy and the consulting side. But we're also straightforward and transparent, mm-hmm. which I think is important. You know, when I'm wearing my developer hat, I'm going out there and working with banks and lenders, and like the things that I've hated about that experience, we really look to craft and create solutions on the lending side so that our borrowers don't have to deal with that when they work with us. So we had one client who's really become our biggest client so far, where he had introduced his brother to us. We had a conversation with him, and then he went out and used another lender. And his brother, who's our client, you know, came back to us and was like telling us about the experience. And he was saying his brother had, you know, a horrible experience, but he was able to get a cheaper rate. So we said, send us over the HUD, you know, let's take a look at that. Mm-hmm. And long story short, there was, you know, some junk fees in there combined with how they were charging him interest. It ended up being a much higher interest rate than they thought that they were paying. So like when we added up all the numbers in terms of what it would cost, it actually would have been cheaper to use our money than the loan that he got. And as I said, our money isn't cheap, right? Yeah. But in that scenario, and how that came about was he just wasn't clear, right? His lender never gave him the list of the fees ahead of time and this and that. So he thought X, Y, and Z, and it just wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm. Dude, what was that kind of the big breaking point? Was it on, I can't remember, was it on when they draw the money out? There was some sort of scenario where.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So they were paying on a full amount of interest, you know, from day one, regardless of what was drawn.
Mm-hmm. So that's key, guys and gals. So if you're listening to this and you're working with a lender, make sure you know the details on it and when you're actually paying that interest rate. Because like Doug said, I mean, you want to make sure you're ideally working with a lender who's only charging when you got the cash, when you're actually working on the cash. And or if that's not the case, you just know all the terms. You know, whatever it is, you are very clear in the terms.
That's what it is. It depends, right? Because that was a large loan amount, but sometimes on those, you know, lower dollar amounts, we do structure it that way as well, because mm-hmm. you need to, because it's a smaller loan amount. Yep. But again, it's all about transparency and making sure that the client understands, you know, what's going on, because surprises at the closing table are, you know, it's the worst feeling. You know, you have it sort of like that visceral reaction when you're at the closing table and, you know, you feel like the, what's that expression? Wool's being pulled over your eyes. It's not a fun feeling.
Yeah. Well, dude, this has been an awesome talk. And I know we could talk for hours just on entrepreneurship stuff too, and completely non-real estate stuff. I mean, we have some great conversations when we're together at the mastermind and just talking on the phone and stuff. And we'd love to have you on again sometime and talk kind of more about that stuff. But dude, any parting words, but I want to ask you two questions and then parting words. So you and I are big on growth. What are you growing in right now? What's your number one priority? Like, man, this is where I want to grow.
So the big thing for me that I started last year was getting back to reading. Mm-hmm. So I created a goal of over the next 25 years to read 1,000 books. So that's 40 books a year. Mm-hmm. And I read 47 books last year.
Did you really, man?
I did.
Cool.
And, you know, I track it. I got the metrics and all that. Yeah. So that's been really big for me, for getting back to reading, because I'm super passionate about reading, in particular, like business books, books where I can learn and grow and mm-hmm. implement in my life, whether it be business wise or personal wise, but reading and being able to implement. And, that just excites me and lights me up. So there's a focus there for me to continue to grow and expand on that. And, you know, I followed suit, sort of inspired by some of the stuff that you've done in the past with book clubs and whatnot. So I created one last year, and I'm getting ready to create another one this year, because it's just, helps me being held accountable. Not for all 40 books, but we'll get our somewhere between 6 to 12 books in the book club. So that's about a quarter of the way there for me.
Dude, you've been crazy consistent with that. And I'm really proud of you. You've been really consistent there. Second question. So you were able to go to Berkshire Hathaway's shareholder meeting. Was it this last one or maybe the last two? I can't remember.
Yep.
What was your biggest takeaway from going to that and being in that room with Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and hearing their wisdom?
So two things that came from the book club. So during the book club, we read, Buffett, The Making of America Capitalist. We read Snowball and we read Charlie Munger's book, Poor Charlie's Almanac. So that sort of manifested out of that. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that I took from that, I think just in awe of the sheer size of their empire, because they have like a showroom, a showcase of all the different entities. And like, the different companies, like, could you read about it in the books, but like seeing it in the room, it's like, oh my goodness, all these different companies was shocking.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say even, so that was like shocking, right? Or like very awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly than that, the takeaway, Munger, I think, is 90-something. Buffett's like 80-something.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are sharp as a pistol. I mean, forget about how they look. They are like Jason Duff came with me to that event too. And I was joking with him at some point because Buffett does most of the talking. So Munger's just sitting there. I'm like, it looks like Munger's dead. Like, just kind of like this, right? But then when he turns it over to him, like, he doesn't skip a beat. So, for me personally, like, I want to be that. I want to be 88, 90-something years old, still doing what I love, building businesses, investing businesses, passionate about what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
and up here in my head being sharp, being able to do it. So I'd say that was really the key or the biggest takeaway for me.
Dude, I love it. And that's an amazing, amazing spot to stop. And man, I just really appreciate you taking the time. I know time is precious right now, especially in the first couple of weeks of your new little one. And congratulations once again. And hoping to see you soon here at our next mastermind if it happens to work out. But either way, man, just really value our friendship and just really proud of what you guys have been able to do over the last several years. So thanks for hopping on with me.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. I love this stuff. And, as I value, our friendship and in a lot of ways look to you as a mentor, just even from the family side. I mean, you got a beautiful family and the way you raise your kids, it's, inspiring. And I've learned a lot just from being around you and even what you've created with Carrot and the culture there. And, there's a lot of things I've already borrowed from that, in my companies. And so, I love what you're doing and, keep inspiring me and everyone else that you're doing that for.
Dude, give me 1 second. Give me 1 second. Here. So I've got a little last minute shameless pitch for Legacy Capital here. So as a client, this is what Doug mailed me in the mail, y'all. If you're watching the video version of it, I've got the Legacy Capital golf polo, and you can better believe when it gets warm and I'm out there golfing, I'm going to be wearing that puppy around. So I appreciate you sending that my way. And where's the best people can connect with you and learn about you or just follow you or even work with you on the real estate side?
Yeah, the best place would be just to go to legacycapitalpa.com. We got a blog on there. My bio's on there. And then if you want to reach out, we got our phone number on there, or you can fill out the contact form and reach me that way.
Perfect, man. Well, Doug, I appreciate it. Everyone have an amazing rest of the week, and we'll catch you on the next CarrotCast. I always love hearing stories like Doug's story and just really following along his story and seeing people grow and seeing people struggle, honestly, and struggle and succeed through those struggles is such an amazing, amazing thing. And if you pull nothing else out of this episode of the CarrotCast, make it be this. Make it be that one of your core objectives over the next 12, 24 months, whatever it is to find your unique abilities. What are the things that you are amazing at that give you energy when you're done doing them? That you probably need to be doing a lot more of in your daily work life or life at home, okay? And like we said, oftentimes we discount our ability to actually do those things. For some reason, we think, well, maybe in a year or 5 years or maybe when X happens or I have this amount of money or we get these employees, then I can do that. But that's all a cop-out. That's all a mental cop-out, like Doug and I were mentioning. And as soon as you can make that transition, as soon as you can make the transition to have more of your day, 50% or more of your time focused on your unique abilities, I can tell you, your income's going to go up, your happiness is going to go up, your influence and people around you are going to see it, and they're going to want to follow you on that mission. And it's not easy to do. So it's not something you're going to be able to sit down today, start writing down some things and discover it. It's something you've got to have nail you at your heart, at your core. And when you do, you'll know it. Okay. And if you guys want to check out, we went through the program called Strategic Coach. I highly suggest it. It's not cheap. It's actually pretty expensive. And you've got to go somewhere each quarter for a year, or Doug and Jason, who I was in that program with, are still in it 5-6 years later. Okay, so if it's going to take a program like that, it's such a great investment, I can tell you. Okay, it's a no-brainer. Or just surround yourself with people who have already found their unique abilities, people who are doing what they love to do, who are on a, you know, kind of on a up, you know, rocket ship kind of going up. And it's not going to always be that way, but when you can tell when you found someone who is living in their unique ability and working in their unique ability, that they have people around them to help them do the things that they're doing, to help them really push forward the mission. And they spend more than 50%, ideally over 75% of their time doing things that they love to do. Okay. So check it out, guys and gals. And there's some other episodes of the CarrotCast that could really, really help you out with this. Go to CarrotCast.com, and Adrian on my team, who is a full-time wholesaler and works for us here at Carrot as well, does multiple deals a month. He walks through his own journey, you know, how he's been able to streamline his time, how he's been able to really work in core values and mission and purpose into his business and increase his happiness, you know, magnitudes by walking through the same process that I've gone through. And so go check out those ones. Find the ones with Adrian Nez on my team. Those are amazing ones. And also check out the other episodes of the CarrotCast. I think you'll enjoy them and love them. And if you're looking for some resources on content marketing, how do you cut through the clutter in content? One of the best ways that you can do that is with a free resource that we have that you can get right now. Open up your cell phone, or if you're already on your cell phone, jot this down. All you have to do is text the word carrot. Text the word carrot to 38470. So text the word carrot to 38470, and we're going to get you that resource. All you have to do is answer that text message. We're going to text back. It'll say, hey, what's your best email where we can send this? And then send us your email address. And then our system will send you out this free resource on how to cut through the clutter in the real estate game with better content marketing this next year. Okay. Text the word carrot to 38470 and then send us back your email and you'll be set. And also, guys and gals, Doug mentioned that he is an Investor Carrot client. He has been for years. And if you guys are in the hard money business or in the private lending business, if you're in the real estate business in general and you want to ramp up your online marketing game and really team up with a company that focuses on performance and ROI for you above all else, we'd love to work with you. So check us out. Take a demo of Carrot at oncarrot.com/demo. And we'd love to see if it's a fit. I was going to say without further ado, and that doesn't make sense. So have an amazing rest of the week, guys and gals. We will talk to you on the next episode of the CarrotCast. And go out there and, like Doug has, find your wealthy passion.